This is the You Can Learn Chinese podcast. For everyone who's trying to learn Chinese or reaching for the next level, you came to the right place. I am your host, Jared Turner, longtime resident of China, co-founder of the Mandarin Companion Graded Reader Series, Chinese blogger, and to all the people out there suffering with paranoia, just remember, you're not alone. My co-host is John Pasden, co-founder of Mandarin Companion, founder of All Set Learning, the Chinese Grammar Wiki, Sinosplice.com, and is a statistically significant sample size of one. In this episode, John and I talk about the difference between learning Chinese as a second language versus learning as a foreign language, which at first glance seems like the same thing, but as you pick it apart, you begin to see how the difference insidiously impacts learning all over the world. Guest interview is with Christophe Boulet from France, who piddled along learning Chinese for nearly 20 years before he finally buckled down and found out what worked for him. All this and more, let's get to it. Hey guys, this is Jared Turner.
Hey, I'm John Pasden in Shanghai.
And I'm calling from Utah in the States. Johnny.
Jer.
How are things going on over there in Shanghai?
Pretty good. Kind of boring. The city feels very dead.
That might not be the best adjective to use, John.
What?
Dead.
Sorry, I forgot.
It was actually good to hear from you, John, because last episode I said that John's out. It was just with the coronavirus, things were shutting down all around Shanghai and you couldn't get a time to record. But I realize I think some listeners might have thought, oh no, is John sick? Is he dying? And no, John, you're totally fine. But give us an on-the-ground assessment of what's going on there in Shanghai, at least.
All right. So in Shanghai, it really does not feel like there's any real health concern. I mean, of course, there's a concern, but no one feels like they're in danger. If you go out on the street, everyone's wearing a face mask. Actually, just yesterday, I went out and I got a haircut, which some people might gasp at, you know, how dangerous, but it was fine. And I did see like one or two people not wearing a mask on the street. In fact, this whole month, it started out as like an extension of the Chinese New Year holiday. The government did a mandatory extension of the holiday, and then it turned into like this massive work from home experiment. I saw an article online saying China leads the world in like the world's first ever large scale work from home mandatory trial run. It's true. Like my wife does this thing where she goes into the office once a week and works from home the rest of the week. For me, since I'm a small business owner, I'm just working from home. Unfortunately, my client face-to-face business has really taken a hit, but you know, unfortunately, I have online stuff going on as well. So life goes on, but the biggest challenge, I think, is for small companies, things like little restaurants,
well, yeah,
barbershops.
My business.
Yeah, shops that rely on people physically coming in, they're having a very hard time.
I've talked about before, and I actually have a bakery in Shanghai, and I've been working with my business partner. It's tough. I mean, they've mandated we close till the end of February. So if everything goes well and we open back up in March, we'll have been closed for 5 weeks. It's killing us. But they're doing some stuff to try to help small businesses too. So it's a rough time right now economically, this impact of all the measures they're doing to try to control the coronavirus.
Oh, and as it relates to the podcast, last week, you know, I'm working from home. My wife's working from home. Kids don't have school all throughout February. So everyone is home. And I have a client, he's got a cute little corgi. I offered to dog watch for him. So it's a bit of a circus, especially that week. The dog had just come. And he's a cute little 9-month-old dog, but he is full of energy, always barking, running around.
But hopefully things clear up pretty fast here and life can get back to normal in China. Okay, real quick, we have a review. This comes from Sam Olay from United States of America. Love the book series. I'm about 6 months into my Mandarin journey, and I finally decided it's time to start reading. The Mandarin Companion Graded Reader Series is awesome. Yeah, I think so too. I actually filmed my experience and put it on YouTube. Sam Says is my channel. I love listening to this throughout my day, and it keeps my motivation high. Thanks for doing this, guys. Well, thanks, Sam. Olay!
Did you watch the YouTube video?
I started to. Squirrel! Something happened, and I got distracted.
It's not like a sneaky multi-level marketing spam attack that made it into our podcast, right?
No, I did check it out, and this guy's legit.
Thanks, Sam. All right, so we got a special topic today, which is close to my linguistics love and heart, And it's also related to everything that we do at Mandarin Companion and to all the struggles you all out there have learning Chinese. So what we're going to talk about today is the distinction between second language acquisition and foreign language learning. Or more specifically, just what is a second language and what is a foreign language and how does that relate to your studies? So I think we all have heard of this distinction and kind of know what it means. We've mentioned it before in other podcasts, but today I want to bring a little more depth to it in a way that's actually relevant. Let me start out by reading a little short section of the abstract of a paper by Hakan Ringbaum.
I'm going to take some caffeine pills to keep me awake through this. Carry on, go on.
I don't care, Jared. Just do it quietly. All right. In a second language acquisition situation, the language is spoken in the immediate environment of the learner, who has good opportunities to use the language by participating in natural communication situations. In a foreign language learning situation, the language is not spoken in the learner's immediate environment, although mass media may provide opportunities for practicing receptive skills. The learner has little or no opportunity to use the language in natural communication situations. Jared, does this sound familiar? Can you think of some examples from your own life?
I'm just trying to wake back up. Okay. No, I was listening. It was very good, actually. So right away, I think a practical distinction might be someone who's studying Chinese in a class in your home country, not in China, and you maybe have little opportunity to actually use it, versus someone who's living in China or Taiwan and is studying Chinese and out there actively trying to use it throughout the day.
Right. So those are pretty much the extreme cases, because there's lots of things you can think of in the middle. So second language is often things like picking up the local language naturally through interactions with the locals who probably don't speak your native language. And then the foreign language is learning in a classroom. And that teacher who's teaching in the classroom might not even be a native speaker of the language you're trying to learn, right? That's maybe not as true for Chinese, but you know, if you think back to high school Spanish or...
Yeah, that was my French class in high school right there.
All right, so those are the really typical cases. Now, I want to ask, why is this important? You might be wondering that. So the reason it's important is because if you get it wrong, and it's usually a matter of applying second language learner materials to foreign language learners, you're not going to make good progress, and you'll forget what you learned a lot faster. So it's about relevance. What's relevant to a second language learner is often not relevant to a foreign language learner. And second language learners are motivated by necessity. They're trying to survive in their environment. So think of like an immigrant in the US. They have to learn English right away so they can make money and feed their kids. Whereas foreign language learners need to cultivate their motivation in other ways. So how do you cultivate your motivation? One way, for example, would be by reading really good stories written in simple language in the target language.
Hey, I think I've heard of a series that writes those really good in Chinese.
There you go. You can imagine if you're a second language learner, you know, you're trying to survive in this country, trying to make money, learning a story about some love triangle or journeying to the center of the earth or whatever it is, doesn't really help you survive. So that doesn't relate to your motivations to learn. Whereas if you're just sick and tired of boring textbooks and you're a boring teacher in the boring classroom, then graded reader, easy to read novels would be a godsend.
You know, John, this is great to bring up because, you know, when we're doing this podcast here, we know we have listeners all over the world. And the majority of them do not live in China or Taiwan or in a native Chinese-speaking environment. But, you know, we do have a significant amount of listeners who are in China. So some of these tactics and things that we talk about, they do apply a little bit differently based on your exact situation. Because now after understanding these definitions, you know, you, the listener, you can assess and say, hey, I'm actually learning Chinese as a second language, whereas some of you might be saying, oh, actually, I'm more of learning this as a foreign language. A lot of things apply differently. In my experience, John, I think I really learned Chinese as a second language, right? I learned it in China. I know you did too. And my experience was much less academic. I didn't never even took classes. I just learned and I studied on my own. And it was more practical to do that when I'm learning it as a second language and immersed in the environment and have all sorts of opportunities to do that all day long. It's a little harder to do that when you are learning it as a second language because you underscore the importance of motivation. And that's something we constantly talk about on this podcast. You got to have a motivation. But it seems like it takes more motivation learning it as a foreign language versus learning it as a second language?
Well, definitely different motivation. And the thing about this distinction between second language and foreign language is that it's a bit of a continuum. It's not totally black and white. So think of someone who's maybe living in the US, they're learning Chinese, but their wife is Chinese, and they often meet with the wife's family and they all speak in Chinese. So that's not quite the same as the typical foreign language learner's situation, right? One other one that I think you sort of mentioned, Jared, is like when I first started learning Chinese, I learned in the University of Florida in Chinese language classes, and my teacher was not a ethnically Chinese person. So I had the stereotypical foreign language learning environment. But then after 2 years, I was in China learning in a very much second language environment. But like a lot of people who move to a foreign country and they want to learn the language, I did have one semester of like academic classes. So that's something that not all second language learners do. You don't necessarily spend time in a classroom as a second language learner, but it frequently helps a lot. And I did that, and I know other people have done it, and it really helps.
So John, it seems like there might be an obvious answer to this question, but what do you think is better for learning outcomes, learning as a second language or as a foreign language?
All right, so there are a few really important differences relating to how you learn the language. So the first is that if you're learning your target language in a second language environment, you know, studying abroad, you're going to learn faster. It's just faster. It's because the exposure is so much greater. Your brain is just forced to assimilate, right? So if you're learning in a foreign language program, then you're going to need more repetition and more review, because as soon as you leave the classroom, you're just not practicing. You're not getting exposed to the language, right? Typically, some kind of instruction and like grammar is very useful for both second language and foreign language. Like you can imagine trying to learn everything about Chinese just by picking it up and talking to locals. Yeah, it's possible, but it's kind of rough, right?
Yeah, it's hard. Some people are talented at that, but not everyone. I think it's more of a unique talent. I think I only really know one guy who speaks good Chinese from having just picked it up.
Yeah, and also I think we all know a few immigrants, like in the U.S., people who moved to the U.S. at a fairly young age, and they kind of just picked up the language, but for some reason, they never quite mastered the grammar or the vocabulary or the pronunciation. So for things like that, if they had had good instruction when they first came over, they might have been able to get to a much more native level.
You know, John, something that comes to mind as we're talking about this is that, you know, there's pros and cons to both, you know, learning as a second versus a foreign language. And there is usually a gap, right? So I think we could usually agree that learning it as a second language, immersed in the environment, is a faster way, perhaps a better way to learn the language if we can, but we don't always have that opportunity to do so.
Yeah, that's totally true. But another reason I wanted to highlight this is because if you're in a foreign language environment learning Chinese, sometimes there's like this weird, like, second language learning material kind of shows up in your course. And it's kind of like, why is this happening? And probably the most typical example of that would be a lot of us when we're studying Chinese the first or the second semester, you know, in a formal program, we get that chapter on going to the doctor. I'm going to the doctor and I'm speaking Chinese. The doctor doesn't speak English. Because, you know, Chinese doctors can't speak English, right? And you have to explain what's wrong with you in Chinese. And I think in the very beginning, when I had a chapter like this in my textbook, I just kind of accepted it. But the more time went on, the more I was like, why do we have to learn this? Like, all right, first of all, I rarely get sick. I'm a pretty healthy guy. Second, there are so many things that could be wrong with you that there's no way that a chapter is going to cover exactly what's wrong with you. And third, if you are really sick, you're going to get someone to help you, right? It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and four doctors, like, they have to pass English tests even to be doctors in China.
So there's this phenomenon where people making the textbooks for foreign language learners occasionally are like, you know, I think we should give them some second language learning materials because why not? And the reason why not is because it's not useful and it's kind of demotivating. It's not relevant.
You know, something I wanted to point out that I think, you know, even can close this gap a little bit between foreign and second language acquisition. You know, like I said, if you're going to spend 1 year in China working, living, studying the language, you'll likely make more progress than if you were just back in your home country. But I recall a study that I had read. It's from an academic, a professor up in Korea. And what he did is he looked at students who were learning English, and he compared TOEFL scores from students, and you track their TOEFL score like over a year or 2 years. Now, what happened with one group of these students went and studied abroad in America for a year. And the other group of students didn't study abroad, but what they did is they were doing extensive reading in English. And the students that did extensive reading, they tracked like how much they read. And the interesting thing about his study is he found out that the students who read like 1 million words in a year scored the same on the TOEFL as students who studied abroad for a year. And so his conclusion from this was that reading 1 million words was about equivalent to studying abroad for a year. And that was super interesting. That study made a stir in the English language acquisition community, at least among the academics in extensive reading, to say, hey, you know, we have something to indicate this. So we just mentioned about extensive reading. You know, that's one reason why, because it allows you more exposure to the language reading, especially extensive reading at your level, because you can't always be abroad. You can't always be in a Chinese-speaking environment, but you can essentially bring that environment to you and still encounter a lot of words. Stuff like that can help you close the gap.
All right, hold on a second, Jared. I'm going to have to play the devil's advocate on this one. What did you say was the conclusion from that study again?
The conclusion was that reading 1 million English words in a year was equivalent to studying abroad for 1 year.
All right, now why wouldn't it be reading a lot helps you do better on a test?
Well, that too.
Fair enough. So reading helps, but I don't know about this whole equivalent thing.
Because all the research and extensive reading, this isn't just an idea, but it's been shown by like dozens of studies that when you improve extensive reading, it improves your reading skills, but also improves your listening, your speaking, and your writing too. So even if you didn't speak or listen or write, just by reading alone, they'll still improve.
Okay, so the reason I wanted to bring up this topic today is because something happened in my work which really brought it to the forefront, this distinction between foreign language learning materials and second language learning materials. And that was actually the novel coronavirus vocabulary. So the week I got back from my Chinese New Year vacation in Japan, and China was in the midst of the coronavirus craziness, my coworkers and I created some materials for learning novel coronavirus vocabulary. And we separated it into levels, A2, B1, B1 plus. And I wanted something that would be useful for all these foreigners in China that have a certain level of Chinese, and they have all this sudden exposure to this new vocabulary that they never learned before. And I wanted this to help them. So some people said to me, hey, this is great. Why don't you make like a course and put it online and anyone in the world can learn about the novel coronavirus vocabulary? It's like a big craze right now. Can you imagine how many people would want to study that? And my reply was, because it's not actually useful if you're not in China. If you're at a high level already, then okay, you need some vocabulary because you might want to discuss the situation with some Chinese friends. If you're an elementary or an intermediate learner, you're really going to learn a lot of highly technical terminology to talk about viruses and virus prevention methods. Because the truth is that this situation is not the new reality in China. It's going to pass. And you're going to learn that vocabulary, spend a lot of effort, and then the situation will go away and there will no longer be a context in which you need it. It's not like you're going to go around finding Chinese friends in the US and be like, hey, let's talk about the coronavirus situation from 5 months ago. It's just not going to happen. So that's a good example of something that is a very useful and relevant second language learning topic, but it's not quite as useful, especially for the lower levels in a foreign language context.
Well, I think that's a very good point, John. And I think there's a lot of topics like this, right? You brought up like going to see the doctor, or, you know, this coronavirus. So what are some other things that might be in this category?
So some other general ones might be like going to get a haircut. You probably aren't going to get a whole lot of use if you're studying Chinese in the US for years by mastering how to use haircut vocabulary, right?
Oh, yeah, John. Honestly, my haircut vocabulary is jianfa, you know, to haircut, and then duanidian. That's it. That's all you need to know. Shorter. Hair, want a haircut and shorter, right?
It's funny. On the haircut topic, I have like been fine-tuning my haircut vocabulary for years, right? I've been in China for a long time, going on 20 years. And I've noticed that my haircut is always kind of different. Like, no matter what I say, I feel like the variable of the different barbers is more important than whatever I say. I started this experiment where I use a photo instead of talking. I just used a photo on my haircut that I got yesterday, and I think it's working better.
Oh, well, good. Usually you've got the Asian fro going on.
No, I don't. It just gets long sometimes. We had a follow-up conversation about, like, he was telling me that I couldn't get that haircut because my hair wasn't long enough. And I was like, but my hair is so poofy. Anyway.
It is poofy. It's Asian fro.
It is not. So anyway, haircut is one example.
So this always comes back to things that we talk about on the show frequently is try to learn things that are going to be relevant to you now. And if you are learning Chinese as a foreign language, you are constantly looking for opportunities to use your language. So it's best to try to study something that you can use, that you're going to use, whether you're going to be out in areas with a lot of Chinese tourists, or perhaps you're a tour guide and you have buses of Chinese tourists and you're taking around different areas in your city. So learning those things that are going to be most practical and relevant to you is going to be more useful if you are learning it as a foreign language. But I think that even goes for saying, even if you're living in China or you're learning as a second language, obviously you just learn things that are most relevant to you. But unfortunately, I think what you're highlighting is that a lot of study materials are geared towards people who are learning it as a second language when they have those chapters on going to the doctor or going to the post office.
And you'll notice that the materials that come out of Beijing are much more likely to be second language slanted. And there's a good reason for that, right? And so the most popular textbook series, or at least it's been the most popular in the past, is the Cheng and Cui series, and it's published out of the U.S. because a publisher based in the U.S. has direct contact with teachers living in the U.S. teaching Chinese as a foreign language, and they're more in touch with what foreign language learners need. And the reverse is true for a publisher in China.
And I will just note that there are a lot of other good publishers these days, that there's some better quality textbooks available now than there were even 10 years ago.
All right. Now, Jared, one little question for you. So let's test your keen analytical abilities. And in the past, we have talked about whether or not it's a good idea for foreigners learning Chinese to use Chinese children's books. How do you think this concept of second language learning and foreign language learning applies to Chinese children's books?
It doesn't. They're never good for you unless you're an advanced learner. That's my take.
Well, probably the most relevant it could possibly be would be if you're living in China. Maybe you have a child or you're a kindergarten teacher or something. But for the most part, you know, one of the reasons that children's books are not so good for foreign learners, especially when they get to be, you know, first, second, third grade, is that those kids are all native speakers. It's like second language learning, but even more so, right? Their context, their needs are totally different from yours. And so if you're a foreign language learning, you're like twice removed from the possible relevance of that material. So yeah, children's books, sometimes you might find a gem that you might like, but for the most part, not the best way to go.
Well, John, I'll qualify my statement a little earlier. Just that I think that you get in books like Curious George, Very Hungry Caterpillar. Now I'm citing English books that are translated into Chinese, but stuff like in that category where it's read to kids, those ones, no, those are not good for you. They're just not, because they use all sorts of characters that even kids who are in second, third grade don't even learn. So these are stuff that's read to kids. What I would say is that children's books that are read to children are definitely not good for you. And so that's going to usually rule out most picture books. I will say, though, that there's some stuff that I've written for like first and second graders, which is actually somewhat decent. There's one series of books called Fei Chang Xiaozi Ma Ming Jia. My son had it, and when he was in second grade in his Chinese school, he could read it, and it was actually pretty good. It has pinyin over the top, so you can cover it up. But it was entertaining stories, and I think they wrote it maybe within 700 or 1,000 characters. I think it's something that's accessible for, you know, an intermediate learner. So if you do find stuff that's maybe more targeted towards like second grade, first, second grade level, this could be intermediate or upper intermediate levels. Students can probably actually read that. And that's better material, in my opinion, than some of these picture books, which can have very difficult characters, which are read to children.
Yep. Also, this kind of intersects with what we were saying earlier about motivation and cultivating motivation as a foreign language learner. If these children's books are interesting to you, then they're a much better material than if you're being forced to read them. because they're not going to be directly relevant to your life outside of China, especially as an adult. If you are interested in them and you enjoy them, then that makes a big difference.
In the end, this all comes down to motivation. Whether you're learning it as a second language or a foreign language, you're going to have to find your motivation and your reason to learn the language.
Totally true. So survival in a foreign environment, that's motivation. Staying interested in this Chinese that you're investing so much time in, that is motivation. So just remember this concept of second language and foreign language, because it might be helpful for you to turn a critical eye to the materials you're studying in Chinese, especially if you're selecting your own material, but also if someone else is selecting it for you. It can make a big difference in where you spend your time, you know, on what materials and the results you get.
Okay, now we have a word from our sponsor, and our sponsor is
Mandarin Companion.
Surprise, surprise. All right, today we are plugging our new breakthrough book that's coming out just here at the beginning of March. It is called Just Friends?
With a question mark. And the Chinese name is 我们是朋友吗?
That's right. So this story is about two best friends in college, and there is a girl that they both, turns out they both like, but they decide their friendship is more important. So they decide, okay, well, we won't try to date her. And so they truce.
What could go wrong?
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong? All's fair in love and war. And so one day, one of the guys sees the other guy driving off in his car with the girl they agreed not to pursue, and the gloves come off.
The conflict. So this one is also kind of unique in that it's set in Guangzhou. We try to cover different parts of China. They are speaking Mandarin, not Cantonese. It's also breakthrough level, which means only 150 characters to read this book.
It's a good story. I think you guys are going to like it. It will be coming out here the first week in March. It's a new breakthrough level called Just Friends. It's 150 characters at that breakthrough level, and it'll be available on Amazon, iBooks, and Kobo. And so you can go out there and get your copy today.
Just Friends?
Just Friends? Okay, now we've got rants and raves. What do you got first, John? Do you have a rant or you got a rave?
I feel like I kind of did the rant with the coronavirus situation update. I think I said enough about that. Let's go straight to your rave. Is that what it is, Jared?
I've got a rant. Okay, so I was looking at some news site, and down below was some clickbait advertisement says, this device helps you to speak any language instantly. And I'm like, yeah, right. I checked it out. Oh, man. Yeah, seriously. Okay, if you guys ever see this, it's called the Muama, M-U-A-M-A, Intense Smart Instant Real-Time Voice Language Translator. It has like these videos like, oh, people here, look, it works. And the guy speaks into it, and then it instantly translates into Chinese or Spanish or whatever. And then the person's like, oh, I understand you, you know. You go look at their website, and it's like, oh, all these awesome reviews. I was highly, highly suspect. So I went and took a look at some of the stuff on YouTube and the reviews on Amazon that like aren't paid reviews. And it's just useless. It's just like the app doesn't work. You have to connect your smartphone, Bluetooth to this thing, and then you have to be connected to the internet. And even then it doesn't really recognize voice very well. So save your money. If you ever see these things, something that's going to like instantly translate so you can now speak 20 languages, you're going to be disappointed.
It's a toy, really. I feel like these come along every like year or so. Like I remember one not too long ago, it was kind of like the Amazon Echo or whatever. You put this little device in your home and you can talk to it endlessly and it teaches you Chinese. I remember that one generated some buzz like a year or two ago. Not completely useless, but definitely not life-changing. Yeah, actually, I had an intern once and he got basically the equivalent of Amazon Echo or Alexa or whatever. And he got it in Chinese while he was in China. And that was kind of cool because it was entirely in Chinese, right? And he could ask it questions, practice his Chinese. So I think that would probably be more useful than this other Muama product.
That does sound pretty cool, John.
I'm not sure if you can get those in the U.S., like the Chinese language ones. They do everything that Alexa does or Siri does, but entirely in Chinese. You guys can look into that and let us know.
That's actually a new idea I'd never thought about before. Getting something like this, a voice recognition technology, but in Chinese, it's like monolingual, if you will. That could be a great opportunity for you to practice Chinese, kai deng. And that's pretty cool. Yeah, all right. So maybe we can turn that rant into a rave. And so if you have an opportunity to find something that only understands Chinese, that might work out pretty well. But if you're counting on it for translation, might not be the best thing.
I'm French. I started learning Chinese about 20 years ago.
Christophe is a Frenchman living in England, married to a Chinese.
I've moved to the UK to do a PhD. And that's where I met this beautiful girl and smart girl that became my girlfriend and then my wife. And she's Chinese. Early days, we taught each other's language. Nothing formal.
Christophe's story is not unlike many I've heard.
A friend of mine heard that I was learning Chinese and he gave me his textbook.
Dabbling in Chinese for some time, learning here and there.
And I got stuck maybe, I don't know. I didn't progress well because I had this very short, intense period where I was learning. And then after a couple of weeks, a couple of months, I was saturating and I take a break. And that's enough to forget what you've learned.
What's different about him is how he finally applied his experience of unsuccessful attempts at learning Chinese into the success he enjoys today. Stay with us.
And when you pick up the Chinese again, I was relearning the same thing I learned before. So very slow progress, you know, high intensity peak followed by nothing at all. I didn't really make any progress.
Now, that's interesting to hear that because, you know, there's times I've talked to people and John and I in the podcast, sometimes the people, they get crammed, but it's not just enough to study it, right? You have to get out there and practice and use what you studied. And that's interesting to hear from you because you got really intense, but then I took a break.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. You don't practice in the context. You learn from a book, but you're not practicing verbally or listening or talking Chinese. So you're not really learning. You just learn once, but the retention period is very short and it's easy to forget it.
What happened next? At what point did your Chinese really start, you know, taking off?
I started to learn more seriously Chinese with the birth of my daughter. So she's 7 years old now.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. But because we live in an English-speaking country, I'm French and my wife is Chinese, we decided to raise her as a trilingual child. If your child is raised in a bilingual environment, that's kind of easy to allocate a role. So it's one person, one language, and one of the language is a local language. So I think that's fairly easy to do that. With trilingual, we wanted to make sure that English was her first language. So for the first few years of her life, we only talk to her in English to make sure she can go to primary school and interact with her peers with a good level of English. It's only when she started primary school that we starting me switching to French to speak to her and my wife switching to Chinese to speak to her. And my motivation is to make sure I stay ahead of the game that, she's not catching up on me on my Chinese.
Ah, I got you. So what were you doing now to learn Chinese to help your daughter?
Well, I think I've changed my way of learning. I've tried not to get a high intense session of learning. I want to do things more level. There's a couple of things that wanted me to give up because there's lots of things that hindered my language learning acquisition. The first one we've talked about is going back to the same basic that you forget because you don't learn it, you don't practice for a long period of time. Also, when I was learning, I was aiming for 100% retention rate. So I didn't want to go to the next lesson before I completely master that session, that chapter. That's really difficult to remember everything. The other aspect that took a lot of my time was I wanted to learn to write the Hanzi. That's a cool thing to do. No, it's when you
it
write
is cool.
a couple of when we yes, and you can impress a few people by writing a few characters.
I know. It's like when you can slam out a sentence in Chinese. It's like, wow, you're amazing.
You're good. Yes. So okay, but just to get that 5 minutes of fame, it requires a lot of work.
It sure does.
So really not worth it. So it was taking a lot of my study time. And I decided, let's not do that again.
I always talk about this, handwriting characters. And some people are really motivated to do it and they really want to do it. And that's fine. That's great. But some people feel like they have to. And, honestly, Christophe, this is a funny story I share. The one time where writing Chinese really came in handy was the birth of my daughter in China. We're at the hospital. We wanted to leave the hospital early. And they wouldn't let us go. And I said, well, we'll sign things. And so they're like, well, okay, we'll talk to the doctor. And they said, well, okay, they brought out these papers and they said, you have to, you know, sign here, here, and here. And then this is all going on in Chinese. And they said, you have to write something here. I'm like, well, what do I have to write? And I'm like, you have to, you know, give us a reason why you want to go home. So I wrote in Chinese, 我要回家. I want to go home.
I let that work.
It worked. And that's one time.
But all this effort for that little moment is really...
It's a lot of work. And that was the result of many hours of writing characters with my son who was in first grade, you know. So it's like...
It's not worth it. Absolutely. Yes. It's nice. It has a beauty to it. That if you learn the character stroke older, it's kind of smooth when you can ride them properly. It's really nice. But for the use I have of it, it's not worth it.
Yeah. But even like you just said, it's good to know the form. You know, I always tell people, you know, don't totally abandon it. You know, sure, learn to write a little bit, but don't be like learning to fluently write, handwrite characters. You know, I say fluently handwrite characters because that's a whole nother skill. It's just like speaking, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, it's one thing as well to see a character and writing it down, like copying it. So, you know, the stroke order, you have the character in front of you, which is fine. And you can copy it.
Yeah. I remember I once had someone ask me, well, if you can't write it, you know, how can you read it? I'm like, the same way you can read a word in English or French and not know how to spell it.
Yeah.
And forgetting, you know, you've overmembered, how do I spell this word again? I don't know, but there it is. I read it. It's fine, you know. Well, it sounds like you had a lot of resources and you tried a little different things when you were learning Chinese. But I mean, what were some other things you were doing to try to help spur your Chinese on and even things you're doing now?
So borrowing this book from my friend and those tapes, I looked for free resources online. And there are tons and tons of things online. And it's free. You can access. There's lots of things on YouTube or on other websites. But it's not structured. There's lots of random things everywhere. And you can spend a lot of time looking at something and then go somewhere else, starting from the beginner's level to make sure you haven't forgotten anything. And then you switch to a different resource. And again, you're in that circle of learning what you've already know or learning what you've just forgotten, not making progress, going to higher levels of proficiency.
Gotcha. So some of the stuff, it's out there, but it's not structured, right? And I guess it takes a lot of work to organize that stuff and to create something that's going to be useful for you.
Absolutely, yeah.
About your time learning Chinese, tell me about a time maybe where you felt like giving up and what kind of kept you going?
I think based on my learning pattern, you can say I had given up many times. It's like people who stop smoking. They stop smoking so many times. So yes, I did give up. And it kind of feels bad because you've spent so much time learning something and you're not using it and you're losing it. And then you go back to it. And it's frustrating. I think if you realize you're making progress, that can motivate you to progress even further.
Well, then, can you tell me about a time maybe where you had a breakthrough?
There are a few things that makes my progress more regular, less sporadic. The first one is spending money on a course. Stop being stingy. I think if you spend money on something, you value it more than if you get for free. And the fact that the course is bite-sized, you know, you can just go on a computer, learn 15 minutes, half an hour, and you've learned something. You don't need to sit there for an hour or... And that special course, the unique selling point was that the dialogue were given by native Chinese speakers on the street. Not the academic Chinese, but more the spoken Chinese as it is spoken in China.
That's a good perspective. I've read some things on, you know, motivation theory too, and or like how to get motivated to do things. And I forget what the term is, but it's like you put something in place where you can't turn back or where you're committed. You got some skin in the game.
Yes. The other aspect that keeps you coming back to it is the daily streak, challenge streak. So every day you go to the course, you do something and it credits one day in your streak. If one day you miss, you go back to zero. I'm at 690 days now, for example, on that course. I don't want to lose that. I have to go back every day to do at least 5 minutes. You don't have to stay that long, but it brings you back to the course. And since you're there, just do a lesson or two and it keeps you going.
You know, that's good advice. Yeah, I actually have an app that helps me track different habits I'm trying to build. And it's called Loop Habit Tracker, if anyone wants to look that up. It's on Android. I've got one habit I've been tracking, and I've got now 869 days in a row. So, you know.
That's really good.
Yeah, I realize that if you get that momentum going with Chinese, and you're like, hey, you don't want to stop. That's super cool.
Absolutely, yeah. Another breakthrough is realizing that you don't need to learn. to write Chinese. That's absolutely fine. Free that time to do something more useful, in my case. Realizing that it's much better to remember 90% of 1,000 characters than 100% of 300 characters. There's a law of diminishing return in terms of learning that last 10 characters in that lesson, that they just don't stick. Some characters just don't stick at all. Better to go forward and forget about those. Maybe they will come back later.
That is wise advice. Yeah, I think for all of us who got a little OCD in ourselves, you know, we want to be like, I got to learn it all. That also goes for like tones. I once talked to someone and they once said that you should strive for 100% accuracy on your tones. You'll never reach it.
Oh, yeah.
But you're paying more attention to it and you'll get maybe 80% right, you know, and then 90%. You strive, but if you don't hit it, just keep going because there's a lot more to learn.
Yeah. And my major breakthrough is when I started to read graded readers. That is amazing. Initially, I gathered all the text from my textbook. There's a text to learn the language, and then there's additional text just to help you practice. So I've copied all these texts from my textbooks in one location in a folder that I was carrying with me, and I was reading those on my commute to work. And that's good because you can read fluent-ish at a good pace, and it's satisfactory. When you read the text in Chinese, you have that satisfaction to understand what that means, all the cryptic wiggle characters.
Yeah, spooky animals.
but quickly, you read the same short paragraph, the same page over and over again. Now, the first time, that's fine. Second time, okay. Third time, it started to get boring. And the fourth time, you just, okay, I don't want to read this one again. So I was looking online for basic Chinese books or low-level Chinese books because I didn't know graded readers were a thing. I first looked at the book that my wife had bought for my daughter. They are kids' book. And quickly I realized they were not adequate for learning Chinese or practicing Chinese. Yeah, so the story was looking online for low-level Chinese books, trying to find something that I could read. I knew that if I was to pick up a novel in Chinese, I would be constantly checking up characters and words in the dictionary and I wouldn't make any progress. It would be too slow. So I stumbled on graded readers. And the first one I found was A Chinese Breeze, 300 characters.
Those are the first ones I read too.
All right. The first one started at 300 characters, and by the time I encountered those books, I knew about 600 characters. So I said, yeah, let's go for that. I bought that book, read it quite at slowish pace initially, because reading every single character and knowing what they mean doesn't mean you understand the meaning of the sentence as a whole. I resisted the urge to check every word or every sentences. I knew that I could understand the gist of a sentence, of a paragraph, of a page. And at the end of the book, you have 10 questions on each chapter. And I got 95% of all the questions answered correctly.
Wow.
Yeah, that gave me that confidence that, yeah, actually, even though you don't understand every single word, you can still make sense of the story and you can understand it.
That's called comprehensible input.
Indeed, yes. And it's a great, I don't know, it's you have one of your memes, and the first time you finish a Chinese graded book, you have a party in your head. It's just...
Yeah, that's on our Instagram and Facebook, guys. Yeah, the first time you read a book in Chinese, this is a guy dancing around. It's like, yeah!
It's that great feeling, fireworks in your head and in your heart. You really have conquered that. and I wanted to continue. I've looked for more graded readers out there besides Chinese Breeze, and I found The Mandarin Companion, breakthrough level. And I have to say, I read them at quite a fast pace. Again, that's built my confidence that I could understand reading Chinese at quite a fast pace, even though it's at 150 characters. So I've completed all those breakthrough level. I'm waiting for the next one soon. Just friends.
Yeah, it's going to be out beginning of March. So we just plugged it on the previous segment. So yeah, it's going to be coming out.
It's on pre-order on my Amazon. And I've read first level one graded readers, which is The Ransom of Red Chief, which was as well very enjoyable to read. And that's the point of those books, is that it's not just a textbook that you read all over again. There's a story that you get drawn into and you understand what you're reading. And that, for me, keep me going to learn more and to progress more.
Well, that's great. You know, it's interesting that my experience was a little bit in tandem to yours. I first read the Chinese Breeze ones. And interesting, I first jumped to the level two book, which for the Chinese Breeze is 600 characters. And I'm thinking, oh yeah, 600 characters, I know those, you know, and I got it. And I'm like, this is really hard. So I went back down to level one, which is, you know, 300 characters. And I'm like, okay, this is a little easier. And, you know, honestly, I did know most of the ones in like that 600 character level, but my reading speed was slow. And it was a slog, and got to get at your level. Even if that level two's at your level or level one's at your level, you know, start a breakthrough, right? And you just you build reading speed and you build that comprehension, and then you move up. I remember reading my first reader. It took me, I think, like 4 hours, you know, reading the first Chinese Breeze. But by the time I got through my third or fourth book, I was slamming it down like in 2 hours or less. And I don't know if you've had that experience yet, but you will.
Yes. No, learning from my lessons, I don't want to go through that book in one day. I read a chapter a day. I want to pace myself. But that chapter is read at quite a good pace. But I don't want to finish the book too quickly, if you see what I mean. Otherwise, I'm so afraid that I'm going to saturate again.
That's great. And that's also a good point. You know yourself, right? You said, I don't want to oversaturate. I don't want to overdo it, because you had the tendency to do that in the past. And afterwards, it led to long periods of inactivity, which is not helpful.
Not at all. I have a question, though, on jumping from one graded book level to the next one. Breakthrough is 150 characters, and the level one is 300. So how do you get from one to the other? Does reading enough breakthrough level build the amount of characters, you know, and then you can jump to the next one? Or do you have to, in parallel, acquire more vocabulary so you're able to attack the next level?
I think the answer is yes.
Okay.
So the idea about, you know, moving between levels is that if you got a good reading speed and a good level of comprehension at a level, you should be able to jump to the next level. And there's always going to be stretch. There's always going to be some characters you don't know. And in our experience, usually you might have to acquire a little vocabulary along the way. In that first book, the new level might take you a little longer, but by the second, third one, you do speed up quite a bit. Yeah. So it's just a bit of an iterative process. In at least the Mandarin Companion series, is that the levels do build on each other. So like our breakthrough level, the keywords are only borrowed from the level one. And so we try to get you exposed to words that are going to be able to help you get up to level one. And the same for level one to level two. So Christoph, so what kind of impact has reading had on your Chinese? I mean, it sounds like it was really positive.
It was, yes. And learning is a difficult task. It requires efforts to move knowledge from your... I like to describe a brain like you have an outer shell, which is your analytical brain, the one used to think about things. And the first time you encounter new knowledge, that's where it resides. You need effort, you need to think to make a sentence, to use the words you know. But at some point, that knowledge sinks into your inner brain, what I call it, inner brain, the part of a brain that doesn't do any thinking, it just acts like a reflex. And the way I see that is that proficiency is where your knowledge resides in your core. And you don't really think, it just comes out. And using those graded readers, it's like a built-in spaced repetition algorithm in the stories, because you have words that come often in that stories, grammatical sentence structure that come again, that are repeated throughout the story. So it has this built-in function of teaching you Chinese by just reading a book, infusing the knowledge from outer shell of your brain into your core and building proficiency that way. So that's how I see it, is that it's a tool to automatically learn without much effort, really, if you're reading at the right level.
I couldn't describe it better myself. I mean, that's the difference between explicit and implicit learning, you know. Explicit is, you know, you're actually studying, you're trying to learn. Implicit learning is you're just picking up stuff. You're not trying to learn, but you are learning along the way by doing or reading. And yeah, you just open your mouth and the words come out. That's called automatic processing. Your brain just understands it. It's like, if you ever seen the movie The Matrix, you know, with Keanu Reeves, you know, it's like, I know Kung Fu. You know, it's just like that. You know, I know Chinese now. It's pretty cool.
And I can see it helped as well with my speaking Chinese, because I've encountered those sentence structure, that grammar many times. Sentence form in my brain, no, directly. I don't need to think about them because I've seen that structure many times before.
Yeah, I always do say that reading is the granddaddy of spaced repetition.
I totally agree with that, yes.
Well, I like hearing about your story here, because it seems like one of your motivations was just maybe being able to connect with your wife. But now it's like having that child, you want to give her more. And so it's
not... Yes, I want to understand what's going on. I don't want to be left on the side and those two girls have a chat with each other and maybe talking about me or...
Well, I want to know, like, what kind of impact has Chinese had on your life now?
It's part of my everyday life. I learn every single day. I don't practice speaking as much as I should, I guess, because I don't feel confidence. Talking a foreign language at a low level of proficiency puts you in a vulnerable position. You're going to say things wrong and people will correct you. It's not really a nice position to be in, but I think that's what you have to do.
Yeah. On our show here, we've had people with high levels of proficiency. One big thing that they're not afraid of is just going out there and making mistakes. Because, I mean, you will, right? We do all the time whenever we speak Chinese.
Yes. When I practice with my wife, she's correcting me, can give me, oh, this is the way you should say it, but she's not telling me where I'm wrong. I have to find out myself. If I say a sentence in Chinese and some of the tones are wrong, she will repeat the whole sentence with all the tones correct, but I still can't identify which of my tones were wrong.
That is so hard. My family growing up, we had a lot of foreign exchange students who lived with us from, you know, all over the world, really. What I found was super helpful, which I did for a lot of our students, is I would say it incorrectly the way they're saying it and contrast it with the correct way to say it, right? Okay. And you say, you're saying it this way, but it's supposed to be this way. And that helps. And when I've asked people to like do that for me in Chinese, it's like, ah, I'm starting to get it now, because you can start to maybe discern the difference.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You could give that tip to your wife there.
Yes, that's a good one.
Well, Christoph, tell me, if you had to start over again, knowing what you know now, what would you do differently?
If I meet myself, you know, with what I know now, I would tell myself the story of the turtle and the hare. Don't rush. Don't try to cram too much stuff at the same time in one go. Too intense learning, I think it's not good. Take a good pace. And pace will vary with people's ability to learn and their motivation to learn. Some will progress faster than others. But I think don't try to overshoot your ability to assimilate a language. And it's to get either a teacher or a structured program. Don't try to get it on the cheap. Scrounging for resources online, it's a waste of time. It's totally scattered and unstructured. So do that. And finally, read some graded readers. They're very good.
Well, excellent advice from a man who knows.
Yes.
Well, Christoph, I appreciate you taking some time to share your story and your experience with us. And I know it's insightful to me and I'm sure many others.
Thank you very much, Jared.
You have been listening to the You Can Learn Chinese podcast. Help us spread the word by sharing this with your friends, classmates, teachers, cousins, patrons, senator, county commissioner, postman, and that one guy named Al. You can subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And please write us a review so we know how we're doing. You can find us on Facebook and at mandarincompanion.com. Apologies to John Cena, we just ran out of time. The You Can Learn Chinese podcast is produced by myself, Jared Turner, and our editor is James Harper. I'd like to thank our guest, Christoph Bollet, and as always, my co-host, the man, the myth, the legend, John Passon. See you next time.